Hello, hello. We are live. Not only live, we're so live. We're so live in many different platforms right now. I want to thank the multilingual team for making this conversation possible today. And of course, our sponsor for today, RWS. And thank you everyone who's tuning in on LinkedIn and also YouTube. Please remember to leave your messages. If you don't yet follow Multilingual Media, please do so. Follow Multilingual Magazine, but also follow Localization Today. That's the podcast you're listening to right now. If you're doing it live, thank you so much for joining us. If you are listening to the recording, thank you so much for listening to the recording. If you are on your phone or if you are on a desktop application in social media where you can leave a comment about what you'll be listening to today, please do so. Comments are very appreciated. It tells us about the quality of the content that we're putting out there. So thank you so much, everyone, for giving us your thoughts about what we do. We have released the digital version of the September issue. Hidden gems is what we're focusing on that issue. We're talking about professionals in global content industry, language industry, translation, interpretations, professionals that sometimes are hidden to the naked eye. But we're bringing those stories to you. If you have great stories that you want to see Multilingual Magazine, let us know about those. And we will make sure to include them in future issues. We have an amazing team working every day really hard to send the magazine to over 100 countries, more than 5,000 magazines, which is great. And of course, we are very happy to have people from all around the world. Today, Ana de Los Angeles, Lima, Peru. Hello, welcome. We also have Anaïs from Madrid. Hola. Hola, Peru. Peru. Hola, Madrid. It's hello. And tell us, this morning for us in the Americas, in the afternoons in some places, even night in some others, let us know where you are tuning in from so that we can see how good of a crowd we have for this topic today. A very exciting topic. Very exciting topic. We are very emocionados. Translate that, please. Very excited. We're very excited. We have an amazing conversation, and we'll introduce our speakers for the day very soon. But we have, again, please. Florida, USA, Juan Romero. Hello and welcome. We also had Sherifa from Montreal in Canada. We also have Brazil. Melina, welcome. We also have Tiago Paiva from Vancouver, Canada. Please keep those coming. We'll take a look at those at a certain juncture in the conversation. Feel free to leave your questions regarding this webinar as you are watching it so that we can have Maureen and Francesca help us with those answers. For those that don't know me, my name is Eddie Arrieta. I am the CEO here at Multilingual Media, and I'll be the host of this conversation today. Oh, we have more people. So Cherifa, we had her, Montreal, Massimo, Oakland, California. And yes, thank you, Camila. North Italy, Maryland, Long Island, St. Augustine, Florida, Madrid, another one, Poland. Oh, Milan. We should do statistical breakout to see which continent got the most people listening to the conversation live. Doesn't count if you listen to it later. But it's enough. We have a very tight schedule. My apologies to everyone. We've been waiting for the conversation for too long. Once again, hello and welcome to Localization Today Live. We are thrilled to have you with us today for a panel discussion on cultural integration, collaboration, and technology in localization. Thank you. Thank you again for joining us. And as always, let us know in the chat where in the world you are watching us from. Where in the world, which continent? First, we are joined by two outstanding leaders in the localization space. Maureen Lainia Phillips, Program Director at RWS Group. With more than 30 years of experience, Maureen has built her career designing workflows that combine speed, scale, and quality, turning localization into a core driver of business growth. She brings deep expertise in complex programs management, and her leadership continues to shape how global organizations deliver content that resonates worldwide. We are also joined by Francesca Di Marco, who leads internationalization and global development at Pinterest. Francesca has spent her career at the intersection of language, culture, and technology, from academia to gaming to social platforms. At Pinterest, she has built and scaled teams that bridge global markets, driving product and marketing strategies for nearly half a billion users. Beyond her work in tech, Francesca is also a filmmaker, a storyteller with a passion for exploring culture through every medium. We'll be going into how cultural understanding drives user trust, how collaborative workflows between client and partner keep quality high, where AI and machine learning can and can't take us, and how to measure whether our localization efforts are really moving the needle. We will also have time for questions, so please share them in the comments. We'll bring as many as possible into the discussion at the end of the panel in about 40 to 45 minutes. Francesca, Maureen, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. And as you can see, we have people from all over the world, and it's always very wonderful to see people from everywhere. And Mila, in the background, if you can turn down the music, that'd be amazing. Thank you. We're always really happy to have people from all over the world, and that's what makes this experience really great. But how are you today? Morning, afternoon? I don't know if you can share where in the world you are. I'm in a city called Sincelejo, in the north region of Colombia. As we call it, the Caribbean of Colombia. So I'm in a small city called Sincelejo. And Camila, who is in our back end, she is in a city called Monteria, about an hour from here. But we actually don't see each other as often as we should. But yes, I'm in Colombia, South America. It's morning for us, so the day is starting.
Lovely. Hello, everyone. I'm based in the UK, just outside of London. And yeah, afternoon. So yeah, past 5 o'clock here in the evening. I'm really excited about this webinar. So yeah, and I've actually recognized a few names of people that have joined. So yes.
Hi everyone. I'm joining from San Francisco Bay Area in California. So it's 9 a.m. over here. Really excited to get this done with you all today.
And we were so happy, as I was telling everyone before we started the conversation, it's a topic that goes to the heart of what we talk about in localization today. So I'm pretty sure they are going to appreciate the questions that we have this morning. Francesca, to begin with the conversation, your team works across many types of content, from UI strings to legal documentation. Can you share an example where adapting content for cultural nuance, and I love that part, cultural nuance, such as tone, terminology, or legal clarity, where significantly improve the user experience in a particular market? And thank you so much for doing this today.
Oh, of course, it's my pleasure. And thank you for that question. One particularly impactful cultural integration example comes from our approach to seasonal content strategy across markets. Early in our international expansion, we observed that our globally distributed content calendar, which was heavily informed by the US holidays and cultural moments, was creating some relevance gaps in key markets. So a perfect illustration of this was our expansion into India, for example, where we identified Diwali as a critical seasonal moment entirely absent from our US-centric calendar. So rather than simply treating it as an add-on campaign, we developed a comprehensive Diwali content strategies with dedicated creative resources, influencer partnerships, merchant activations, and so on. So this wasn't just translating existing content, but it meant creating an authentic celebration of a festival that represents significant planning and inspiration moments for our audience in India. And to execute these in an effective way, we leverage a network of subject matter experts that we hire through RWS, local video editors, graphic designers from our creative team who make targeted adaptation that resonate in an authentic way in each market. So we've implemented a scalable process through templatization of creative frameworks of production workflows, while we're still preserving strategic flexibility for market-specific tailoring. This is a balanced, or we're aiming at building a balanced approach, which allow us to maintain consistency and efficiency while we ensure cultural authenticity. These are small adjustments or seemingly small adjustments. And for example, modifying visual metaphors or adapting color schemes to local cultural associations or reconfiguring layouts. By doing so, we deliver outsized impact in marketing effectiveness. And simultaneously, we're also addressing potential legal liabilities that might arise from culturally insensitive content. So the key learning for us has been that true localization isn't just adapting what exists. It's building flexibility into our fundamental content architecture. And so cultural relevance becomes a core feature rather than an afterthought. This investment in cultural precision pays dividends, not only user engagement, but also in brand trust and legal risk mitigation across our global footprint.
Francesca, thank you for that answer. I think many leaders in the audience are really going to appreciate a lot of what's in there, and we will be able to unpack it for the audience in different formats. Maureen, thank you so much for doing this. In localizing Pinterest content from the RWS perspective, of course, where in the workflow is cultural nuance most at risk of being lost? And how do you safeguard against it?
Well, for us, for the content we localize for Pinterest and, let's say, the product UI strings, they particularly require that extra care and caution, and it's sort of a keen attention to detail. And this is from everyone involved, not just the linguist. So, you know, UI strings can be sort of decontextualized among other UI strings, and that requires sort of updates on a given day, and sort of the lack of a job level, which we mean sort of a cohesive linear body of text when translating, that makes the individual string level context crucial. So the linguist must carefully check the content for each string and be 100% understand 100% that the given context. So even a half certain guess can lead to poor end user experience, and we know what that means. Poor end user experience leads to decreased engagement, which is largely how Pinterest measures success in international markets. And the query management that sort of ensure that linguists can quickly get the clarification they need before pushing the strings directly to the next workflow step. So yeah, if I have to give an example, just short string like board as an example, and that could be without context easily turn into a plank. And, you know, we don't save the pins to plant, right? So either way, context is very key here. And if I have to look at other restrictions when you're translating UI, such as the sort of text expansion, for languages that expand, character limits become necessary in some cases. And character limits for some locales are sort of restrictive, require that level of creativity, like transcreation, to convey the meaning in a sort of literal, fitting way to still land culturally. Placeholders can also be tricky because different languages have different grammatical structures, and sometimes source strings need to be rewritten or recoded to accommodate for the requirement of a particular language. And our linguists are diligent about logging queries when this happens, and we work closely with Pinterest team to push changes through a sort of a streamlined way that allow end users to optimally engage with the content in matter of days. So there are many sort of feedback loops in place to ensure swift, smooth transition between all those involved. So a lot of safeguards are designed and engineered into those strings before we receive them. And that query management helps really to fill the gaps of knowledge understanding without really impeding on the turnaround times. And ultimately, just to add as well, should the safeguard sort of fall prior to or during a translation, then we have what we call post-production LQA protocols that kick in to identify issues in in the localized product, and then take the steps that we need to address then and learn from that so we can in the future.
Thank you so much for that answer. And just a quick reminder, if you're watching on LinkedIn or YouTube, we'd love to hear from you. Drop your questions in the comments at any time, and we'll bring them into the QA portion toward the end of this panel. For both panelists, at which points or what points in the localization workflow do RWS and Pinterest need the closest collaboration to make sure content lands well in each market?
I'm going to start. I think that the most critical collaboration points between Pinterest and RWS occur at two key stages of the localization workflow. First, we've found that collaboration during contextual adaptation is vital, is really, really essential, and particularly for sales, marketing materials. And there is often an assumption that content can easily flow between similar markets, but this can lead to missteps. Recently, for example, when US and Canadian sales teams were unified under one North American leadership, the assumption was that content could be shared seamlessly due to linguistic similarities across these two markets. But when developing materials addressing tariff instability, our market specialists discovered that there were a lot of differences in how these policies affected Canadian businesses, and they were requiring completely different messaging. The second point is the quality assessment stage, which demands a close partnership, as Maureen was anticipating before. We've implemented a collaborative review process where Pinterest stakeholders and RWS language experts jointly evaluate whether the localized content achieves both linguistic accuracy and business objectives, and something neither team could effectively judge independently. So what makes this approach successful is that Pinterest tries to think globally from the outset, soliciting input from different teams and the RWS team. And yet we're also pragmatic about sometimes making strategic decisions to prioritize certain markets based on business objectives, as long as those decisions are made with full awareness of the cultural implications.
Yeah, Francesca, you summed it up, correctly there. I mean, this is what is an effective workflow is like for collaboration-wise. So seamless collaboration across each stage of the workflow before, during, and after creates a safeguard against those intensified moments of heightened collaboration that can arise if steps are skipped to fast track a delivery, if a launch date is pushed up. And over our partnership, we've become much more involved in the early pre-localization process stages. And if I have to give an example, sort of the naming feedback is a good example. where we receive these requests when Pinterest is planning to introduce a new product or feature. Our linguists are briefed on the details and asked to provide insight into how it will translate culturally. We're looking at the functionality, the design, linguistically, and our linguist will flag any barriers to internationalization and or localization. And I must say, their feedback can even impact on the direction Pinterest goes with naming a product or feature. So they have scrapped entire concept based on our feedback, gone back to the sort of drawing board on the English feature name. So it's a proactive approach, a mature localization module to cover sort of the cultural adaptation into sort of the entire creative process. We've also done audits as another great example where we've helped sort of cultural feedback on early design prototypes so that the product content can be adapted on for specific markets from the outset.
It'd be great to also get from both of you a perspective on then what are the three must-have elements, process steps, communication rituals, or shared KPIs that makes this Pinterest RWS partnership run smoothly?
I'm going to start. The three must-have elements that make our Pinterest RWS partnership truly effective, in my opinion, are integrated planning sessions. This is when RWS get informed about our quarterly roadmap development. So that allows us to align localization resources with product and, but with product priorities before deadlines become urgent. Second is a transparent measurement framework with shared KPIs that track not just traditional metrics like turnaround time, linguistic quality, but also business outcomes such as engagement rates of localized content when compared to source material. And lastly, a formalized knowledge transfer protocols that ensure cultural insights are captured during localization flow and they go back to our creative and product teams. And most of them are long tenured linguists, but sometimes we have also new linguists. And so we're creating a virtual cycle where global thinking becomes embedded in our upstream development process.
Yeah, and for me, just to add to what Francesca is saying, agree with what Francesca just said, but as well as sort of trust and transparency, the most important elements are timely and efficient communication protocols and the use of Pinterest project management tools and communication tools facilitate all this. And in addition, we have regular sync ad hoc video calls for any collaborative problem solving and process building.
As it should be, and I'm sure I'm getting tons of insights here for our own and the way in which we operate with our partners. Maureen, in your experience, when you're looking to expand into a new market, what are the early alignment steps, you know, such as adapting terminology for local usage, reviewing the regulatory or compliance requirements, or running in-market usability tests? Which ones of these help ensure the localization approach is actually accurate, culturally relevant, and also scalable from the start?
Yeah. So generally, when we onboard sort of new locales, we onboard for new locales, the first requests are the policy content that we're getting. So regulatory compliance requirements must be tackled first. Otherwise, you know, you might not even be able to expand into a market. So when Pinterest launched into Arabic, Afrikaans, Croatian, Bulgarian markets, we knew about it well in advance. I mean, we had already onboarded our linguist prior to receiving the request. It was very important from our side to really rely on the heads up from Pinterest. So we were able to right away localize the policy site pages. So internally, we had to coordinate with our quality team, our supply chain, to onboard the linguist with the right profile, with the content-specific expertise and credentials. So we tested several linguists for each locale before decided who to onboard. In addition, the Pinterest localization team, they have a streamlined and elaborate feedback loop between our linguists, their stakeholders, with Francesca's team, my team as intermediaries. And straight after localizing then the policy content, what happened, which was a great approach, is Pinterest followed up with their legal glossary creation request for these locales, which was very smart because since the translators had, you know, the translation was fresh in the linguist's mind, so they reviewed the final copies of the legal translation one last time without that added time pressure, and extracted the terms that should be added to the glossary. And also prior to actually step back, prior to going into certain markets, what we also do helping Pinterest with targeted qualitative research, for example, before deciding to launch into additional Indian markets, we help test app trends, user behavior, for example. We often are asked to help with the preliminary market research as well. So yeah, pretty cool stuff we do for them.
Pretty cool stuff. And of course, Francesca, how do you balance then the speed of product iteration of Pinterest with the need for RWS to build the rigorous localization checks without creating any friction?
Yeah, I mean, balancing rapid product iteration with localization quality is essentially about strategic integration rather than treating them as competing priorities. So we have approached this challenge through two key mechanisms. First, we've transformed our resource readiness model through dedicated linguist teams in the market for 40 languages. So rather than relying on ad hoc resource or location, we secure a committed daily workload with RWS. And this creates linguist continuity, affiliation, a sense of loyalty to our account, to our brand, to our product. And these specialists work on Pinterest content every day. So they're thoroughly trained on our products. They're very familiar with our brand voice and consistently available when we need them. So this model has dramatically reduced the knowledge transfer overhead that typically slows localization processes. And the result is significantly faster turnaround without sacrificing the nuanced understanding that quality localization demands. And the second mechanism, our tools integration strategy has been transformative. So we've moved beyond simple file hands-off to create deep technical integration between Pinterest development environments and RWS translation infrastructure. So by implementing real-time API connections that enable continuous localization, our engineers can now push content for translation. They can receive complete assets within the same development sprint, which is 24 hours, while maintaining their velocity and ensuring linguistic quality. So the revenue, the ROI on these investments have been tremendous and been really substantial. We have reduced the localization lead times while simultaneously we have improved quality metrics. And the key insight was recognizing that speed versus quality is a false dichotomy, because when you address the structural inefficiencies in the localization, in the traditional localization model, you have to look at both aspects rather than looking at those two aspects as competing priorities.
And thank you, Francesca, for sharing. AI and machine translation can definitely accelerate volume, but where have you seen it trip up on cultural authenticity? How do you put effective human-in-the-loop safeguard in place?
That's a great question. I mean, AI and machine translation have certainly transformed our capacity to handle volume. But the cultural authenticity dimension remains nuanced and very complex. So interestingly, we have observed that AI doesn't just struggle with cultural authenticity. It can actively amplify cultural biases and assumptions if not properly guided. And at Pinterest, where our premium position, our premium positioning demands tailored content rather than simply high volume, this distinction is really critical. Our highest value content requires cultural resonance that goes beyond linguistic accuracy. So we've implemented a very sophisticated human-in-the-loop approach designed for role-specific oversight, where humans focus on what they do best, cultural judgment and contextual awareness, while AI handles volume and repetition. And also we measure the right things. So rather than focusing exclusively on efficiency metrics, we track cultural resonance indicators like regional engagement deltas between original and adapted content. And those becomes the really key metrics that we care about. And this ensures that we're not sacrificing the premium quality our users expect for mere volume. The most successful approach has been viewing AI not as a replacement for a human cultural expertise, but as a tool that amplifies it. So allowing our specialists to focus on higher order cultural adaptation while AI handles the routine elements of the localization process.
Thank you, Francesca. I really, really appreciate your perspective on that. I want to take 1 second to say hello to everyone who continued telling us where they were tuning in from. We have people from many different places around the world, a lot of those in the United States, but of course, Europe and South America. Francesca, while we have you at it, and I know this is something that many have asked, and very little answers are provided. Can you mention one or two KPIs, whether on engagement, retention, or MPS, that you rely on most to prove that localization investments are paying off?
Yes. When evaluating localization ROI, we've moved beyond the simply set metrics to focus on indicators that truly demonstrate cultural resonance and business impact. If I had to prioritize two KPIs, retention would unquestionably top the list. Unlike more volatile engagement metrics, retention captures the cumulative effect of user comprehension and cultural fit over time. When users continue returning to our platform in international markets, it signals that the localized experience feels authentic and trustworthy. So we found that while engagement can spike for various reasons, content distribution, algorithm, seasonality, or even viral but unsustainable interest, retention reflects sustained value perception that only comes when localization truly resonates at a cultural level. And the second KPI, we track market-specific conversion deltas on shopping features or other central features. This directly correlates localization quality with revenue impact and helps us prioritize our investments. We have identified specific linguistic patterns and cultural presentation elements that in a meaningful way impact purchase behavior in different markets, allowing us to refine our approach continuously. So that's what's been transformative for our organization is linking these localization metrics directly to business outcomes, rather than treating them as isolated language quality indicators. And this approach has elevated localization from a compliance function to a strategic driver of international growth.
Thank you, Francesca. Maurice, it sounds like you want to say something.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you want to hear my perspective as well. From our perspective, so in addition to what we call the NPS, which is the Net Promoter Score for us, the two other KPIs that we use to measure success and that are relevant to Pinterest are the on-time delivery and quality. So on-time delivery tracking is important for Pinterest to know how quickly string updates are being pushed through to the users. So we have committed to turn around 1,000 words, sometimes more, daily for 41 languages, which is not an easy task. So we track our on-time delivery at the project level and at the language level. And the language level on-time delivery is the metric that proves our reliability as a partner. So for a language to be considered on time, the entire workflow must be completed, delivered within 24 hours across all jobs included in that daily project. So yeah, I'm proud to say that the team, my team works hard to keep the on-time delivery score high. On average, we achieve about 97% delivery of the languages on time daily. And the quality KPIs mentioned is important. We have our established quality framework to ensure that our linguists deliver the quality translation on Pinterest's most visible content types, whether it's products, strings, a website. And it gives then our quality team the data they need to really swiftly act upon languages that required. Again, very proud of the quality team. They work hard to provide high quality deliverables, and the average quality trend has been sort of staying at 96% for the past quarter. So yeah, that's what I wanted to add.
Happy to hear, and thanks for sharing. Of course, another question there. And how do you set realistic targets for markets with scarce historical data? Do you benchmark against similar locales, or you start with qualitative user research?
Yeah, setting realistic targets for new markets without robust historical data requires a balanced approach that leverages both quantitative signals and qualitative insights. So we have developed a guided clustering methodology that begins with quantifiable market characteristics, clustering regions based on language families, English tolerance, cultural proximity, index, a device mix, a GDP per capita, internet penetration. So this gives us a starting framework to identify potentially similar markets where we can borrow initial benchmarks. But these quantitative clusters only tell part of the story. So we learned that seemingly similar markets can have dramatically different user behaviors based on nuanced cultural factors that aren't captured in broad metrics. And this is where targeted qualitative research becomes really essential, and not as an afterthought, but as a critical validation mechanism. So we conduct focused user studies in new markets before full-scale investment, and using these insights to pressure test our clustering assumptions and identify market-specific variables our models might have missed. This approach has significantly improved our forecasting accuracy for a new market entry, so avoiding both the overly optimistic projections that lead to disappointing results and the overly conservative estimates that might cause instead to underinvest in promising regions.
Thank you, Francesca. Thank you, Maureen. And of course, thank you to everyone who has been listening to the conversation so far. We still have some time in this conversation. And if Maureen and Francesca are okay with it, we'll open up the forum for questions from the audience. We are going to be selective, of course. A few of those queries we'll probably respond to after the recording. So if you are looking to ask a question today, please put it out there. From my perspective and from the multilingual team, one of the big questions that we've had throughout the past few years is the conversation on culturalization. And culture is represented in so many different ways. For example, for myself, culture is the way that the things people do. And the things people do are very different in my hometown, Sincelejo, a very small town in the coastal region of Colombia, versus anywhere else around the world. And my curiosity to understand how all of this helps inform what you do professionally. What is culture to you, if anyone wants to take on this question from the multilingual perspective, which is a topic, as I mentioned, that it's driving a lot of our conversations for our audience?
So personally, culture it's a mixture. For me, I'm based in the UK, but I'm French, but also half Dutch. I'm from South America, by the way, Eddie. I was born in a small country called Suriname. So culture could be, I look at it as any particular things that are done in that country that represent that country. And for me, if I think of Suriname, the Surinamese culture is all around anything they love around food, about dancing. So yeah, that's how I see what culture is from my perspective.
I'm gonna add that for us in a very operational sense, it means adapting all the elements that have a cultural meaning. So visual elements, colors, imagery, symbols, cultural values, sensitivity. So whatever has a cultural meaning would need to be adapted. I mentioned before the seasonal content strategies that are built around market specific cultural moments. That's, I think, it's an explanatory case of where we adapt in a very creative way and with a creative direction culture so that we can reflect local aesthetic preferences, visual language, and we really customize a user experience to match their local decision-making and interaction patterns, essentially.
Thank you, Francesca. Thank you, Maureen, for indulging me on this. And I know that this is going to be an overindulgence now. But I was curious when we were reading the profile on the extracurriculars that we might have. So, Francesca, Maureen, if you can indulge us, I would love to know a little bit more about what you do outside of this very, very professional background that we've been talking about today. Is there anything you can share with us that might be surprising to anyone?
I was just thinking, surprising. I don't know if anything surprising. Why do outside? I do love to travel and get to know, go to different countries and get to, sample the culture, because we're talking about culture, right? And trying new food and what else do I do outside? I'm not doing any fancy stuff like Francesca. She does, filming, and I'd like to hear a bit more about that.
Yes.
Well, I've been spending quite a good amount of sleepless nights working on documentary. I have three projects at the moment, two documentaries and a short film. So I'm working on the script for a short film and two documentaries at the moment. I love dancing. I've been taking classes, Afro-Brazilian dance for, I don't know, 20 years now. But I'm not a good dancer. So yeah, this is what I do outside of outside of this.
Of course. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think that's all about the human element that we also like to see here, localization today. I don't see any of the questions that we would have gotten, but I don't know if there is anything else anyone in our audience believes we haven't covered. If that's it for today, I will say goodbye unless there are any thoughts. I think it was really great to have a conversation with you, Maureen. Francesca, we'll hope to have you again live, hopefully as well, in different scenarios here on Multilingual Media.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us. I really enjoyed it. And goodbye, everyone. I wanted to add, if there's no questions, that means we've done a good job, Francesca, right? We have explained everything correctly. So there's no questions. Yeah, we've done a good job. But thank you.
Thank you so much for having us and for the conversation.
Yes, I would say there is one question that I think we could have. Just one. Right. It's from Paula Barbeto, and she's asking right before we go, I'm interested in knowing which platform or tool the linguists use. Do they use Trato Studio, or did RWS develop something specific for Pinterest?
That's pretty worrying.
Yeah, no, they, the translators work directly in Pinterest's TMS, the Deca tool directly, but it's not Trados.
All right. Thank you very much. Then this is it. This brings an end to our conversation, to our discussion. Now we'd like to open, and my apologies, I was going to open the floor for questions again. Thank you, everyone who joined us today. And a special thanks once again to Maureen and Francesca for sharing. This was Localization Today Live. Until the next time, goodbye.